Vandeventer reports the latest worldwide news prepared and edited in the WOR newsroom. Brought to you by the brewers of Hoffman Beer, the beer that tastes just like the finest tap beer fresh from the keg. Hoffman Beer has that clean, fresh taste that makes it an outstanding favorite with thousands of beer drinkers. Order a few bottles tomorrow. Once you taste it, you two from now on will be heading for Hoffman. And now here's Vandeventer with the latest news.
In many respects, this has been a lamentable day, despite the fact that it's been celebrated throughout much of the world as VE Day. There seems to be no doubt but what the Germans have surrendered unconditionally. The Germans admit it, and it's not denied by any official sources. And yet, it's a lamentable day. Millions of American troops have fought a magnificent fight. They were joined by millions of Russians and millions of British, French, and other national groups. Germany has been brought to her knees. And yet, through some unfortunate quirk of fate, the whole beautiful effort of General Eisenhower and his staff has ended on a note of discord. It must be fairly obvious to everyone at this hour that despite the celebrations, despite the news, and despite the lack of official denials, that this has not been VE Day. Millions of lives have been lost to bring the Germans to their knees. For a little more than 3 years, the troops and their commanders have lived for the day when German generals would sign the unconditional surrender papers. There is no doubt that they prepared for it. There can be little doubt but what they had thought out in a complete way, all of the details which would be best for the American people and for the world at large. And yet there was that quirk of fate which is jarring the war to its end. Here's what happened. Edward J. Kennedy, the chief of the Associated Press Bureau in Paris, telephoned to the London Bureau of the AP this morning with the announcement that the war is over and that the Germans surrendered at 8:41 New York time last night. He gave the details. The surrender was signed for the Germans by Colonel General Jodl, for General Eisenhower by his Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Smith. A French and a Russian general added their signatures. The terms were signed in a little red schoolhouse in Reims, France, where General Eisenhower had his headquarters. Kennedy's story contains a statement made by General Jodl. He had his information, and there's little reason to doubt that he had it all correctly. But it was not supposed to be released. Whether he made the mistake or whether some army officer made the mistake is beside the point. It was not supposed to have been made public in any way which would have given it the appearance of authenticity. Maybe Kennedy was overzealous to get the news out. Maybe it had been given to him by some underling in press relations. Any one of dozens of things might have happened, but none of them should have happened. It must be borne in mind that General Eisenhower has said several times that when VE Day comes, it will be announced by the chiefs of state, meaning President Truman, Prime Minister Churchill, and Premier Stalin. It would not be announced until all fighting had stopped. And he said the troops in the field would know of the surrender before the people at home. And there's a reason for that. It takes time to inform troops in the field. Fighting went on today in Czechoslovakia, and it's quite likely that some American casualties were suffered. Therefore, hostilities had not ended. General Eisenhower wanted none of the casualty telegrams to be delivered from Europe after the announcement of victory. From the very day on which he was named Commander-in-Chief of the Allied Forces, he has fought this war to save every possible Allied life. He has fought the war to bring it to a successful conclusion and no doubt had prayed for this day when the Germans surrendered. He wouldn't want it confused by a premature announcement. And yet, that's what happened. There is, of course, some supposition that Premier Stalin has forced the withholding of the announcement. A definite statement was made to the effect that President Truman and Prime Minister Churchill were ready to make the announcement at noon today, but that Stalin said that he wasn't ready. President Truman said that he had an agreement to say nothing until all three could announce it at once. During the afternoon, the British Ministry of Information announced that Prime Minister Churchill would make a statement at 9 o'clock this morning, New York time, and said further that tomorrow will be considered VE Day in the British Isles. That tended to confirm rather than to deny the Associated Press report. There still was no announcement from the White House until 7 o'clock tonight, when it was stated that Mr. Truman will speak at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. That broadcast will be carried by WOR, and presumably it will be the announcement we've been waiting for. Mr. Truman's broadcast will be followed by a transcribed broadcast from London by Mr. Churchill. If Mr. Stalin also broadcasts, that also will be transcribed and rebroadcast by WOR. Thus, it's lamentable that the war has been brought to its conclusion on such a note of discord. It has done nothing more than excite the press, the American people, and raise a barrier. Tonight and throughout the day, the White House has been flooded with telegrams from editors throughout the nation complaining about the treatment at the hands of the military in Paris. They objected to the lifting of filing privileges for all of the Associated Press. They charged the action at Supreme Allied Headquarters was a violation of the fundamental rights of free press. And during the evening, the restrictions on the AP were lifted for all of their correspondents but Mr. Kennedy. I have no way of knowing at this moment who is responsible for the error and the mix-up, but it certainly is unfortunate. During the day, there's been general celebrating here in New York, in Paris, and in London, where the news was accepted as gospel. Some of the smaller towns in Washington and on the West Coast, there was less rejoicing. They apparently waited for the official announcement. Today, Times Square in New York was jammed by a shouting, milling throng of thousands upon thousands of persons. Many of them were much the worse for drink. Some persons were injured, either in the joyous celebration, but only a few arrests were made. Tomorrow, New York City schools will be open as usual, regardless of the official announcement. Schools in smaller communities likewise will follow regular schedules. On the battlefronts today, there also have been developments. There has been serious fighting between German troops in Prague and the partisan forces. Tonight, General Patton's 4th Armored Division is less than 6 miles from the city limits of Prague. It's pushing ahead against amazingly slight resistance to go to the rescue of the embattled citizen army. The German commanding these troops is reported to have defied the order of Admiral Dönitz that the German troops lay down their arms and submit to unconditional surrender. He was quoted as saying on a German-controlled radio station that he intends to fight until the path is cleared for him to return to his homeland and liberate the Germans from Bolshevism. But he has a rather hopeless job ahead of him. The situation is not quite clear in Norway. The Germans there are reported to have given in under the Dönitz command, and there was one report late this afternoon which said that these German forces were prepared to march into neutral Sweden to be interned. No official announcement has been made on that action. However, there are reports tonight that an Allied fleet has entered Oslo Harbor and that Allied troops are about to be landed. They perhaps have landed already. Another Allied fleet is reported entering Trondheim Harbor. A late report from Paris tonight says that the King and Queen of Belgium have been liberated by the United States 7th Army from their prison quarters 8 miles east of Salzburg. And so the European phase of the greatest war in history already has, or soon will, come to an end. But in the Pacific, there's still much fighting ahead. The Japanese realize that the world is against them, but are preparing to fight to the end. Japanese positions in the southern sector of Okinawa have been brought under American guns, and the 1st Marines and 10th Infantry troops have scored new advances. And thus it is that all over the world tonight, the forces of the United Nations are one day closer to victory. And now here's Bob Martin for the Hoffman Beverage Company.
You may not have to worry about chipping the finish or repainting your post-war car. In fact, it may not be painted at all. Wartime experiments have developed stainless steels that come in various colors. They'll be much easier to keep looking new. It's just one more of the many new conveniences and enjoyments planned for America after the war. But for beer drinkers, there's a new enjoyment to be had right now. It's Hoffman beer, the beer that has the clean, fresh taste of finest tap beer fresh from the keg. When you pour a glass of Hoffman beer, notice its rich, creamy color, just like that on a glass of beer drawn from the tap. When you drink it, notice its clean, fresh taste, just like that of the finest tap beer you ever drank. So ask your dealer for Hoffman beer in the popular quart-sized bottle. Once you try it, you too, like thousands of others, will be heading for Hoffman. And remember, Hoffman beer costs no more than ordinary beer. Now back to Van Deventer in the WOR newsroom.
King George VI, in a dramatic message to General Dwight D. Eisenhower, congratulated the Supreme Allied Commander tonight on the complete and crushing victory over Germany. His telegram said, and I quote, 11 months ago, you led the Allied Expeditionary Force across the English Channel, carrying with you the hopes and the prayers of millions of men and women of many nations. To it was entrusted the task of annihilating the German armies in Western Europe and thus liberating the peoples whom they had enslaved. All the world knows that, after fierce and continuous warfare, this force has accomplished its mission with a finality achieved by no other such expedition in history. On behalf of all my peoples, I ask that you, its Supreme Commander, will tell its members how deeply grateful we are to them and how unbounded is our admiration for the courage and determination which, under wise leadership, have brought them to their goal of complete and crushing victory. Here at home, President Truman has won a hands-down victory in the Senate on his biggest appointment so far. The Senate has confirmed 60-2 Mr. Truman's nomination of Robert Hannegan as Postmaster General. The overwhelming vote followed an attempt by Republicans to force public hearings on Hannegan's appointment. Republican Senator Forrest Donald of Missouri demanded the hearings on several grounds. For one thing, Senator Donald contended that Hannegan has decided to continue serving as chairman of the Democratic National Committee. This, according to Donald, is a job not compatible with the position of Postmaster General. Donnell also claimed that a series of incidents in Missouri demonstrate Hannigan's unfitness for office. But when the motion for the hearings was put to a vote, the Democrats defeated it 35-28, with the voting along strict party lines. Some minority members of the Senate indicate that they may bring charges of political corruption against Hannigan in a move to block his taking office. These senators, fearful that Hannigan, as Postmaster General, may organize a political machine to aid the president if he seeks re-election, are expected to concentrate their fire on Hannigan's career in Missouri, where he was associated with the Pendergast machine. Elsewhere in the Capitol today, the Navy announced a plan to replace some 25,000 enlisted men, more than 42 years old, with younger men during the next 6 months. At the same time, military observers believe that most of the soldiers who have been overseas since the early part of 1943 or during that are being discharged after VE Day. Soon after VE Day, the 48-hour work week will be suspended in certain areas where the labor market has loosened up. The War Manpower Commission also may lift controls on workers now frozen in their jobs. United Mine Worker boss John L. Lewis has won one of labor's longest fights. The Supreme Court has given legal recognition to portal-to-portal pay. The court ruled the soft coal producers are required by the wage hour law to pay their miners for underground travel time. Meanwhile, in New York, hard coal operators and the United Mine Workers held another non-productive two-hour meeting today. There still is no sign of an agreement on a new work contract. The negotiations will be resumed tomorrow afternoon. Meanwhile, 72,000 miners in the hard coal fields are staying away from their jobs despite a government order that they get back to work. The work stoppage began last Tuesday when the work contract expired. The government seized the mines last Thursday. Neither the operators nor the miners' representatives would make any comment at the end of today's negotiation. Meanwhile, a holiday in the sale of kosher poultry was started today by more than 90% of New York City's 5,000 dealers. That's according to an industry spokesman. This spokesman added that it would continue until dealers could buy and sell at ceiling prices. Receipts at the city's live poultry terminal dropped 46% below those of last Monday as raisers anticipated the dealers' action and shipped much of their poultry to other cities. Now here's a brief recapitulation of the news at this hour. There has been a premature announcement of VE Day, but both President Truman and Prime Minister Churchill are expected to clarify the announcement at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, and their words will be broadcast by WOR. There has been general celebrating in New York, Paris, and London, but many smaller communities took the victory announcement in stride. There's still a war in the Pacific to be fought, and it will be long and hard. There was heavy fighting around Prague and Czechoslovakia tonight, and the Allied fleets are reported to have arrived in Oslo and Trondheim harbors. Some German fleet units are reported still holding out in Copenhagen. Here at home, the president has won a victory in the confirmation of Robert Hannigan as Postmaster General, and the Navy has announced a plan to replace older men in the sea service as soon as possible. And that's the news at this hour. And now here's Bob Martin for the Hoffman Beverage Company.
Join the thousands of beer drinkers who've discovered Hoffman beer. Once you enjoy its clean, fresh taste, just like the finest tap beer fresh from the keg, you too will be heading for Hoffman. So ask your dealer tomorrow for Hoffman beer in the popular quart-sized bottle. Democracy is on the march the world over, and the Greater New York Fund is an example of democracy in action locally. A gift to this year's campaign aids the 408 local hospitals, health and welfare agencies participating in the fund. Support the Greater New York Fund with your contribution. Listen to Van Deventer with the latest news every evening at 11 o'clock. Brought to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday by the Hoffman Beverage Company of Newark, New Jersey, a member of the United States Brewers Foundation. This is Bob Martin speaking.
The Herald Tribune news will be heard following station identification. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.